I'm Mike, I'm an addict. It is an honor and a privilege to introduce my sponsor to you tonight, who has been my sponsor for 30 years. So if you think I'm fucked up, you're going to find out why in a minute. So back in 1995, when I got out of treatment, I went over to the Bear Creek Community Center to my first NA meeting, and Hardy was there. And Hardy kind of stands out physically in a group, and I was suffering, I was shaking, and not sure if I wanted to be clean. And I remember Hardy putting his arms around me, and he says, "I got good news and I got bad news for you." I said, "What is it?" He says, "The good news is there is a solution." He says, "The bad news is we're it." And then I was just thinking about this today. I'll never forget this. I was at that meeting with my first wife. She was an addict. Obviously, didn't work out real well. But I remember after the meeting, she went up to Hardy because she was really confused about my drug use, and she asked Hardy to describe what it was like to get loaded. And Hardy, in great detail, described a sexual act to my wife at my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. In great detail. I think it took longer than the meeting itself for him to describe it. And then I stuck around, and after 30 days, you know, if you were back in the 90s, we had chips. It's before we had key tags, we had chips. And I remember getting my 30-day chip, and I went and sat down, and Hardy says, "Well, you got fucked too, didn't you?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "You're supposed to get a 30-day chimp, not a chip. Where's the chimp?" Right? He gets it. So Hardy has been my sponsor all these years, and he's taken me through the steps, and I'll always remember, too, and the first time I did a four-step with Hardy, and we were at Jason's Deli out in Katy. I was nervous as could be, and, you know, you get to that point in the step working guide where it asks about secrets, right? So I start telling him my secrets and all this, and you know what he does? He starts fucking laughing. He's laughing. I said, "Why are you laughing?" He says, "Where's the barnyard animals in your story? What about the chickens and the rabbits and all that? Where are they?" But seriously, I want to say this about Hardy, and he needs no introduction. So many of you know him and love him. He's been a big part of the Houston NA community for several years and several conventions. And the theme of this convention is hope, right? And when I think about hope, I think about the second step. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. You know, the second step gets us ready for the third step. It doesn't talk about God. It says that power just needs to be loving, caring, and have the ability to restore me to sanity. So, and it says also that the restoration of sanity is a lifelong process. Because even with close to 30 years clean, I can be fucking insane on a daily level from this disease. And I don't know who's going to restore me to sanity. It could be the meeting. It could be any one of you. But I will say this. It can also be your sponsor. And over the course of the last 30 years, I can't tell you how many times this man has restored me to sanity and walked me off the ledge. And for that, I am truly indebted for his friendship and his love. And for that, I give you Hardy R., my sponsor.
I'm an addict. My name is Hardy. I want to take a moment to remind myself that I got here by the grace, and I remain here by the mercy of the Almighty. Now I want to quote one of my favorite musicians, Captain Beefheart. "Let's skin it back and have some fun. I don't like you. I don't like you. And I goddamn sure don't like you. And it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the fact that I have a disease of the mind, body, and spirit that always manifests itself in my selfish, self-centered behavior. Hell, I don't like me. I don't know where I got this damn disease. I don't know if I was environmentally exposed, I fell on a crack pipe, or I was genetically predisposed. My father drank himself to death. But I know that I have it, and I'm responsible. I am the only one responsible for my recovery. I know that for a fact. All right. I'm just like every one of you. I started off, I partied to feel good. You know, six of us would get together and go and buy a $7 matchbox from Bubba Red. We'd go get Nicodemus the Wino to go get us a half a gallon of Thunderbird. We'd go over to Jimmy's house and listen to Iron Butterfly and get fucked up. Then I started getting high to change the way I felt. But the disease is so insidious. Until near the end, I was just using so I wouldn't feel at all. And here's the trick. Here's the insidiousness of it. I stopped getting high long before I stopped using. All right. Therefore, that's the reason why every time I hear somebody say, I don't know how many highs I have left in me. I do. Not a goddamn one. I can go out and use. I can even get a rush. But I will be back in that same place, sitting on the corner with the ugly twins, guilt and shame, waiting on that bus, that crosstown bus, to jails, institutions, and death. And that's just the fact of the matter. Why am I here tonight? Here's my purpose tonight. To let any addict who wants to know, not need to know, who wants to know that you can't be too sick to recover, but you can be too intelligent. I'm gonna say that again. You can't be too sick to recover, but you can be too intelligent. When I came into the rooms, I was one of the sickest addicts to ever shit between two shoes. Every fetish, every ism, every perversion known to mankind, I either did it or I was there while it was being done. Except two. Pedophilia, I ain't R. Kelly, and necrophilia. I just lied. I thought she was a heavy sleeper. I fucked my knee up jumping out that casket, too. I'm gonna give you an example of how sick I was when I came in, before I came into these rooms. Hillcroft Square Apartments. Off of Fondren Hillcroft, anybody familiar? All right, abandoned apartment. I'm in there. Here's the scene. There's an old utility spool, four candles, rock man, rocking 2 ounces of powder that's mine with the four candles. Next to him are 3 women, not Jehovah's Witnesses, in various stages of undress. Me, over in the corner, is my folded up 3-piece custom made suit, size 60 long, because when I came into the rooms, I was 6'2 and I weighed 355 pounds. A world's largest crackhead. A designer tie, a single needle Oxford shirt. I'm standing in the middle of the room, all 355 pounds, buck naked, except the cops referred to it as bulk naked, with a pair of Bobby Joe Reed tube socks on and some Lucchese ostrich hide boots. It was in the Love You Blue era. Everybody wore cowboy boots and suits. Over on the other side of the room was a sheet of polypropylene, a half pound can of Crisco lard, a ping pong paddle, and a batting glove. Things were going to get interesting in that room once Rockman got there. Before I knew it, the place is full of lousy with cops, about 12 of them, with SWAT gear and stuff on, rifles, flashlights, handcuffs, and all this shit. And they rush into the room, and they're bagging up everything. And I'm looking around and stuff, and Rockman, he freaked out. And I'm standing there, and the one in charge walks up to me and looks at me and says, "Reverend, why are you in here with people like this? You go and put your clothes on, don't ever let me catch you over here again." And took my brand new Fifth of Thunderbird and poured it on the floor. I was pissed. I was indignant. Meanwhile, one of the female officers who was leading one of the ladies out, who was not a Jehovah's Witness, looked at my little coin purse and went, Now I'm really pissed. I'm over. I get dressed. I walk back outside. Before I go get my polypropylene, my can of lard, my ping pong paddle, and my batting glove, and put it in my designer gym bag. And I walk out the place, and there are about 100 Ubers out in the parking lot and in the sidewalk. You know, the Ubers, "Ooh, what's going on?" You know, "Put your fucking teeth in, you know? And you got a hairnet on it, you know, midnight." And they're trying to ask me what's going on, and I'm still raising hell. And this voice of reason comes to me on the side and says, "Say, look here, large player. Here's a sack. It's yours free. Just put this shit in your pocket and leave so that the police can get out from around here so we can conduct business." I did. I went and got into my brand new Seville, drove off over to Sunnyside, and went and pulled the same crazy shit. See? You, and I'm standing here, so you can't be too sick to recover. But you can be too intelligent. I came from an educational background. My father was the only black doctor in this little town. My grandmother raised me. But my father was also the town wino. And there was a field in between their two houses. My father drank himself to death because he was pissed that he never got credit for taking the veins in a person's legs, turning them upside down, and using them in bypass surgery as an artery. So he never got credit for that. He never got a cent for it. So he drank himself to death. But my father had people around him, four winos and a winette, and they were responsible for my early education. There was Brother Hubert. He wore a white linen suit from Memorial Day to Labor Day with a straw boater hat. And he had a master's of fine art from Juilliard. And he used to tell me, "Come hither, young doctor, and let us pontificate the universe." He taught me astronomy. He taught me philosophy. He taught me Camus. He taught me Kenyatta. All of the people, you know, and then we would top it off with a Fifth of Thunderbird. And then there was They called him because anything you asked him, he would always respond, And then something in Latin. He'd say, "Is it gonna rain tomorrow?" He'd go, "In flagrante delicti." And then there was Zap Daddy. Zap Daddy taught me how to direct traffic and bum for spare change. Zap Daddy would have lived a long time, except that this particular time they were building Interstate 10, and he got out and he tried to direct tractor-trailer rigs. They say when they found him, the tractor hit him so hard he was wearing his asshole as a bow tie. Now, Zap Daddy had a woman. Her name was Yutta. She had 7 teeth, 3 on the top, 4 on the bottom, different shades of brown and green. Yutta was short for "You the ugliest woman around here." Yetta taught me the female anatomy. She used to say, come here, little doc, let me show you my moneymaker. I looked, the only thing I could see was something that looked like a first baseman mitt with hair around it. I was a grown man before I discovered that women's breasts were supposed to be not look like hound dog ears with raisins on the tip. And then that was my favorite, Mr. Moon. Mr. Moon always wore rubber boots, cut-off work pants, khaki, and a coat and a tie. In the winter months, he'd also wear a shirt. Now, Mr. Moon never said a word. Mr. Moon had this tuft of hair. He was bald, but he had this tuft of hair that looked like a pure bleached cotton halo around his head. Mr. Moon was so black that when he get out the car, the oil light come on. His thing was, anytime there was a full moon, there was a hayfield, we would strip buck naked and run through the hayfield. Now, these are the people that gave me my early education. I never missed a day of school. Went to college. At 20, I had a doctor of veterinary medicine. At 23, I had a master's in toxicology and immunology. I always had good jobs. I was making six figures when it was six figures. With the company car, you know, the 401k pension plan, all of that. The only problem was I could not learn how to stop and stay stopped from using drugs. Okay, sports fans, this is where the shit's gonna get deep. So if you got barf bags or anything necessary with you, you need to get your sponsor on speed dial, here we go. Okay? I could not stop and stay stopped because an addict cannot stop and stay stopped. An addict must quit. Here's the difference. Stopping is an answer. Once you stop, and with an answer, once you solve the problem, here comes the next problem. Quitting is a solution. I need to know the difference between an answer and a solution. An addict only needs one answer. What time the meeting start? That's it. Okay? So now, I have to have this solution to get into the solution. I will give you an example. Let's assume that I've been going to the gym, I've been sparring with the big bag, you know, learning the sweet science. Mike Tyson is coming to town because the art museum is opening up a new wing of medieval art, and he's interested.
Right.
And he comes by the gym, and he works out, and he says, anybody want to spar with the champ around? Sure, I've been banging on the big bag, you know, yeah, I want to do it. So I get into the ring with him. Mike is hitting me so frequent until my breath smells like leather. He is hitting me so hard until for the next 2 weeks, my shit will be smooth like tapioca. Now I can stop fighting, can't I? Will he? Will the disease? What I have to do is stop. Take those damn gloves off. Lose the desire. Get my ass out the ring and out those people's gym. Go back and find me a new way to live. So I need to be in the solution. But what do I know about solutions? Here's what I know. Solutions require a complete surrender on my part. Hey, that sounds like the first step. Solutions require a power greater than me to accomplish. Hey, that sounds like a second step. Solutions require me to change my thoughts and my behavior. Hey, that sounds familiar too, huh? So I must get into the solution. I was very fortunate when I got out of treatment over at Parkside. They sent me back. I was working a hazardous waste site. They sent me back to North Adams, Massachusetts. All right, some of you have heard about this guy before. There's only one meeting in town during the week. So I go to this old Russian Orthodox church. It's got two basements. The meeting is built in the 1800s. We go down to the bottom basement, and I go to this meeting, and I've been back in town 2 days, and this guy comes up to me, and he's all of 5 foot tall, and he looks like a character out of a Humphrey Bogart movie. He's got on a beret, horn-rimmed glasses with rose-colored lens, one of those real trench coats, and a cigarette holder in his mouth. And he walks up to me, and he looks up at me, and he says, "Hey, arsehole, where you been?" I said, "What'd you call me?" He said, "Arsehole, this is New England. We don't say asshole." Huh. All right. I said, "And sir, who might you be?" He says, "My name is Richard G. You can call me the Magic Dick." So, you know, I'm not one to allow anybody to fuck over me easily like that. So I said, "Yes, sir, your penisness, sir. May I inquire as to why they call you the Magic Dick?" He says, "Certainly, arsehole. When I show you how the solution to all of life's problems, except one, where to get more dope, is in the steps, you'll think I'm using magic. When I get you on the steps, that's when you know why they call me Dick." I says, "I understand your smegma-ness, sir." He says, "Listen, arsehole, we love you. To show you how much we love you, we wrote a book about you." And all of a sudden, he was holding a basic text. He said, "This is all about you. Look at the first and the last page." I said, "Ain't shit on them." He said, "That's right. They're just like you. You don't know shit. Now go sit your arse down over there and listen. And while you're listening, try to figure out why you use the same alphabets to spell listen as you do silent." Shit. Man. So I go to meetings every day. I went to, only because I was plotting to kill him. I really was. I was going to figure out how in the hell was I going to bury the body. And that's the only reason why I went. 90 meetings, 90 days. And after a while, I figured out, damn, I got 90 meetings. But then he said, "Listen, arsehole, you tend to complicate shit, so here's how we're going to do this. I'm going to explain to you about the steps. The steps, there are 12 steps. They're divided into three parts. The first four are about what you are. You're a fuck up. Everything you touch, you fuck it up, all right? Your every thought and actions are insane, all right? That's two. Three, you have no spiritual guidance whatsoever. Four, you need to take a list and look at what the hell you've become. All right? The next four are about who you are. Now, who you are is somebody who cannot deal with the exact nature of what's going on with them. You have taken all of your character traits and perverted them into character defects to accomplish what you want to accomplish. And you need the help of a God of your understanding to get out of this shit. You also need to take a second look at every person, place, and thing you fucked over, starting with you. He said, now the last four about who you want to be. You want to free yourself from guilt and shame. You want to take responsibility for all of your actions. 10, you don't want to do this shit no more because it don't feel good. That's all step 10 is about. It says, either if you do something and it makes you either had a shits or a using dream, you know that it wasn't spiritual. I said, oh, that makes sense. Now, you want to get with your God, the God of your understanding, you stop driving and let God drive. Now that you've had these spiritual awakenings, now you want to become of service to other people and other organizations and the world and to yourself. Oh, it makes sense that way. And, you know, First, I worked the steps several times. I went over the literature. I took the dictionary. I parsed out the words and everything. You know, they say the literature, some people get aggravated that that they say that the literature is written on the eighth grade level. Well, you're an eighth grade motherfucker. You just gotta understand. But I worked the steps, all right? Then I began to take the steps. I began to apply the spiritual principles. I began to integrate the concepts and the traditions into some form of changing the way I thought and I lived. And now, what I've learned is I now get an opportunity to live the steps. This is that part of my life where, regardless of what goes on, I have to be in a state of grace. I have problems, you know, and I skated for so long because everything went so well. But now, you know, come Halloween, I will have been married to the same woman for 50 years. A blind date. I'm still looking for that bitch that introduced her. Because I'm scared of that woman. I had a girlfriend once. She found out where she lived and sent her a sympathy card. But now, over the past 3 years, she began to suffer from dementia. This is a woman who, I don't know if you're familiar with a company here in Houston, who worked for AIG for 29 years. She flew the corporate jet all over the world to figure out computer glitches. This woman can now not turn the computer on. She can't remember how to do it. I'm sitting here looking at someone who is a shell. That's it. Alzheimer's and memory loss is called the long goodbye. I'm in another support group. I'm in another support group that we meet and we discuss these things, and believe it or not, one of the things that really gets me is at the end of the meeting they go, remember what you hear here, who you see here, let it stay. Fuck, that's catchy. I'd like a tattoo of that, you know. But there's no good side to what the hell is going on. But let me tell you something. If it wasn't for the program of Narcotics Anonymous, if it wasn't for the spiritual principles that I have to look at every day, acceptance, humility, I'm looking at willingness. You know, all of these things. I'm looking at somebody that I have to care. I'm looking at a 10-year-old child. And this is, and some of you people have met my wife, and you know what an outgoing person she is. Well, she's still outgoing, but there's nothing there. Yet, through this program, through this process, I have learned that the God of my understanding took me to this point so that I could be prepared to do what is necessary to get through this. Because ain't no way in hell I could have done this before I got clean. No way in hell my selfish ass could have done it when I was early in recovery. I had to age in this process. I had to come to the realization that everything, looking back, everything that I've been involved in has been all right. God has been in charge every step of the way. Every step of the way. You know, I had a quadruple bypass in 2008. It's strange how things come in a circle. My old man invented the process. Never got credit for it, but it saved my life. I had quadruple bypass, and the doctor came in and had the nerve to ask me, when we had you on the pump and your heart was stopped, why were you laying on the table smiling? I said, well, really, if you really want me to be honest, I figured that if God was ready for me, I'd done all I could. If I was going to get up off this table, I got more work to do. All right? And before I came in this motherfucker, I stole your wallet. Son of a bitch. Now, I was frightened because when they put me under, I don't know what I said, but I do know this, that there were several of the doctors that assisted in the surgery that would not come in my room after I recovered. So I must have confessed to some deep shit. But looking back, you know, in that process, looking back, I thought, man, God must have been in that room. Must have been in that room, because I'm still here. I've had, since then, you know, I had colon cancer. Woman, you know, the doctor came in and said, well, we'll fix this shit, you know, and then you can get the hell on out of here. And everybody told me, don't go to this doctor, because she has poor bedside manner. And she was ready to have a baby. So I said, not thinking, I'm a veterinarian. Oh, looks like you're about to calve. That went over big. And this doctor told me, I said, look, I got this thing with syringes, because I used to shoot dope too. I got this thing with syringes, you can't just show me one. And they accidentally showed me one and I went off, and she went off on the staff. She says, we have to handle him differently. This man is serious about his recovery. This man is serious about what it's going to take to make sure that he stays in the process. And that's what we have to do. Now, today, we're at a convention. Let me say this about conventions. Here's what I was told, ironically, by the magic dick. His royal scrotumness. He said, arsehole, conventions are, the purpose of a convention is to celebrate recovery. That's it. You can go back to your deep shit on Monday. Mm-hmm. While you're here, what we need to do is make sure that we share the only spiritual principle that can be given and received, hope. Yep. We need to give out as much hope as we can this weekend. And we need a few plates of hope to go to take with us. So during this entire process, please enjoy and pass out that spirit of hope. And just think about this. We all are benefiting from a program that gave us a God of our understanding. Not a God of our upbringing, because God of our upbringing, you fuck up, you burn up. The God of our understanding, you fuck up, you straighten up. You don't do this shit no more. All right? He gave us a God of our understanding, then tricked us, and gave us a book with no author. Huh? Huh? Think about that. A book with no author. And the benefit of the wisdom and experience of the worst motherfuckers in the world. Now you think about it. And on a daily basis, these are the people that give us life, hope, and the opportunity to fulfill our dreams. If you don't do anything this weekend, enjoy yourself. Pass that hope around. Allow yourself to receive that particular hope. Don't be selfish. You know, I'm glad for this program because now I love you. I love you. And I'm thinking, no, I love you too. I'm an addict. My name is Hardy, and I'm glad to be here.